for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Welcome into IUP Plus today. Glad you are here. Whether you're watching us on News for Utah Plus, our free TV app, or YouTube, or anywhere else on the internet, we are glad you found us. Please tell your friends. If you haven't downloaded that streaming app, I would highly recommend it. News for Utah Plus on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire. Joined today by a couple of political analysts, going to break down all of the hot topics here in Utah politics and across the nation. Aaron Ryder and Adam Gardner. Hi, guys.
Thanks so much for having us.
Oh, it is good to be with you. I'm so glad you're here. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm Aaron Ryder. I am a local attorney.
I'm a lobbyist here in town. I do local and federal work.
It's going to be so fun to get your hot takes. Producer Peter's here, too. Hi, Producer Peter.
Hi, everybody.
How's it going?
Oh, it's just great.
We're so glad you're here. Thank
you. About to get out of town.
Yes. Thanksgiving holiday on the way. Absolutely. Let's go. Some time off. I like it. All right, let's dive right in. We got a couple of redistricting related topics to hit on. First and foremost, there are, with our new congressional map here in Utah that a judge has just ordered, there are now three solidly safe Republican seats, and we have four members of Congress who are Republicans. So somebody is getting boxed out in this district. And there was a Politico article this week that talked about that sources are telling them that they believe Burgess Owens may retire. And Blake Moore would run for that Congressional District 2. You can see right there the purple district. That's the northernmost district in Utah. And then Mike Kennedy and Malloy would split 3 and 4. Not clear who runs in which one. But what is your take on this, guys? Like, what are the Republicans doing right now?
Well,
like,
I have a really hot take.
Yeah, who's elbowing who out right now?
I'm a little upset about how this stupid map was numbered.
Oh, really?
And whoever put CD1 in the middle...
That's true.
That was a dumb
that
idea.
That was dumb. Okay.
Put CD1 up top where it should be. Let's go in order, people.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Got it. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I hear
so
that's a super
annoying.
Great hot take.
I'm very annoyed.
Super great hot take.
I hate this stupid map anyway.
If that's the only
and
thing
so
that makes me mad
I'm
about the map,
that the numbers
we're good.
Are stupid too, and that bugs me.
Adam's so contribution is
learn
set
how to number stuff. That's all I'll say. But as far as like Republicans go, we've heard the sources are telling Sam Benson with Politico, used to be a Utah beat reporter, great reporter. But it sounds like sources are telling him that Owens is going to retire. But Owens, I don't think, has actually said that.
Yeah, so, he did comment in the story and was basically just like, don't speculate. We'll see. He didn't confirm or deny.
This is news to me.
Right.
And that makes sense. I think... I understand why this is happening. When you're in D.C., everyone tries to have a great relationship with each other, especially if you're from the same state. So you don't want to be seen as pushing somebody out or asking them to retire. So the way that this is going to be handled most likely is folks will meet together and they're deciding which districts in which they should run. And one of the logical explanations would be, hey, he's kind of been in there the longest. Let's see if we can push him out.
Right, but if you're Burgess and you don't want to retire, what do you do? I mean,
well, but I don't know that that's, I mean, talking on pure speculation, there have been discussions about Burgess stepping down in the not too distant future anyway.
Sure.
So I don't think it's unreasonable to be looking at Burgess Owens as potentially the one who would step down. Now, does he want to? I don't know. And would he be doing that in 2026? I don't know. But with where we are right now, right, it might be one of those things where, you know, who else goes? We have two pretty new members of Congress in Celeste Malloy and Mike Kennedy. Blake Moore has a seat in leadership. He's not going to go anywhere. So, you know, what do you do with that?
And
right?
His seat remains pretty well intact.
That's, yeah.
I'm going to call it the first congressional.
The northernmost.
The purple one.
But the new CD2, that keeps his district pretty well. So he's going to be representing the same people. It's Hill Air Force Base. That's not going to change a ton. So nobody's going to challenge him for that seat. Where it gets really interesting is CD3 and CD4, because it's splitting Mike Kennedy and Celeste mm-hmm. Malloy's districts kind of in half. So they're really taking each other's constituents. Mm-hmm. And so they have to decide what to do with that. But also, Burgess Owens represents most of that west side and a little bit of the east side of both of the districts. So he keeps a lot of his constituents there too. So it does make it a little awkward. I will say that the yellow district there that you're seeing on your screen is another really stupid district. And the reason it's so stupid is because you're representing, I'm trying to point to something that I can't point to.
Right.
But up in the Uinta Basin, also covering Blanding, fine. That is a long drive. That is a nightmare to represent. But they've done it for a while, that district. And it's gone back and forth between the Northern Utah and the Eastern Utah districts. But then you put St. George and Cedar mm-hmm. City into that district, which I can't fathom why any idiot that drew this map would do that. So I think it's just really bad all around. And they're stuck with a bunch of no-win situations unless Burgess Owens gets out. Sounds like he's not going to. And so really what we're talking about here is Mike Kennedy and Celeste Molloy having some very awkward conversations about what happens next.
Mm. And what's interesting, too, is that Celeste Molloy won her seat in large part because of the support that she was able to gain in southern Utah. That is where she's from. That Cedar City, St. George area is her area, and that is what she ran on. She has been there for that area since she got into office. So, yeah, but now that – the rest of that district is essentially where Mike Kennedy has been. Now, he's only been there for a year, mm-hmm. but that is where he's been for the last year. So, yeah, it gets complicated.
Oh, to be a fly on the wall in those conversations where they're like, no, I'm running there. I'm running there.
it is a testament to what's going to happen next, because it's going to be very awkward, and they're going to have to discuss it like friends wanting to, like,
no
all
hard
wanting
feelings.
To stay in Congress, and hey, one of us is going to have to run against the other, and this is going to be really painful. We can't attack each other. It's may the best man win. It's really a difficult time, and I totally feel for all of them. Then you have that CD1 that should be CD2, but I won't complain anymore about that.
But it's stupid.
But that district is, I mean, that's where I live. I live inside that district. Mm-hmm. And so it does not represent communities of interest, because apparently West Jordan and South Jordan are not communities of interest. But that is a super left-leaning district. Not one of those four members of Congress currently today could ever win in that district. It is so gerrymandered to the Democrats. There's no way that a Republican can win there.
So do we think there is a sacrificial lamb who has to run in CD1, or does it just get unopposed?
I think you will have someone run in CD1, because it is essentially creating a new seat and a new spot, and none of the other four are going to run in CD1. You're going to have somebody run there, but I don't think you're going to – I mean –
You've run for Congress before, Aaron.
I have run for Congress. I say this in the right way, but it's probably not going to be someone terribly credible.
And I think it could be. I think there's a lot of people that are willing to. I think everyone should run for election one time. I'm not saying everybody should win, but everybody should run.
Adam.
It's an amazing. I've done that. I've run twice. I'm done. It is a really cool opportunity, and I think the Republicans, there's a ton of credible, awesome Republicans in that district. So,
but I don't know that means they run there, because how do you get, like, Republican money? It's going to be hard to get Republican money in that district when you are now going to have a fight in the other two districts, probably. And
you're
even
spot on. You're
even
right.
If Burgess Owens doesn't run next year, and you have Mike Kennedy and Celeste Molloy, I would not be surprised if both of them end up with a primary challenger anyway, because
from
of
the right or from the left,
I don't know, like, but in the primary, right, like, there, I would, based on what we saw last year with Celeste Molloy, based on what we saw, the fact that Mike Kennedy is so new, and if he now runs in that yellow district, which covers St. George, that's going to open him up for challengers to run maybe to his right.
Yeah, I would,
in that area.
Well, to Adam's question, I think it would have to come from the right, because those districts are so, like, R plus 45 that you can't win from the left.
But I think you could see people on either side. Whether or not someone more to the middle could even win in a primary is a different question. But they're new districts, and there are new dynamics in those districts, and that's going to open up the door for different kinds of people to jump in. So I would not be surprised if we see primaries pretty much in every one of these, except for Blake Moore's, maybe, and even there he probably still will have a challenger.
I think Blake's going to have
I mean, he always has, and I think he probably will again, but the real fights are going to be in that green and that yellow district, just by virtue of how these go. So again, the Republican money is going to go there. It's not going to go into that District 1. And if you don't have the money in that District 1, even if you do, you likely aren't going to be able to win it.
Yeah, you would need a lot of help to win that. Okay, so speaking of one of these four congressional representatives, Burgess Owens, he came out today with a letter basically criticizing Judge Gibson. The gist I read from the letter, it was an open letter that he put on Twitter basically saying, you have upended this entire process and made this all really difficult, and, you know, just criticized her timing and all these things. What did you guys make of that letter when you saw it? Did you think he was right, or did it go too far? We don't often, I mean, we see criticisms of judges, don't get me wrong, but like, this was a little bit more pointed to this judge. What did you make of it?
Look, if you're Burgess Owens and now everyone's talking about you being the one that has to step down from your House seat, yeah, I'd be ticked.
You're like, mad. Yeah.
You're mad. And he would probably be exactly in the same place as the legislature and how they view Judge Gibson's decision. So this letter to me is not at all surprising.
Yeah, it's not a love letter for sure.
No.
Look, judges aren't infallible. Judges should be criticized. They make wrong judgments and decisions all the time. I believe Judge Gibson was wrong. Even if she was right on the merits, her timing is so spectacularly bad, where she gets to hear litigation for, you know, 5 years and oral arguments for 10 months and then just throws this in the legislature's lap. Then when they comply, she says, no, I don't like what you're doing. I'm going to do something at the very last minute. So even if we agree with her ruling, I think her timing was just bad. It did screw up the process. It is going to be hard for the lieutenant governor to certify all this in all the districts. It is going to be hard for county clerks to get all the lines drawn and everything ready to go by the time people have to file the second week of January. Like, this is coming up so fast. So I believe Congressman Owens was right to criticize her. It's his prerogative, even if he was even if he was wrong to criticize her. He can if he wants to.
I think he was in the right to do it. And the arguments that he made in the letter were good arguments. It was the timing argument to say, what are you doing? Like, you waited until literally the last second. You could have given the legislature, you could have done this in a way that allowed for more timing. And she certainly could have. I think there, I don't know. It's interesting. The timing decisions are interesting.
Well,
here.
I just want to point one thing out. So I've followed this court case very closely, right? As these hearings were happening, and it, like, the legislature's lawyers have known for a long time that November 10th was the deadline. They never once said, that's too late. You're not going to give us enough time to appeal. Like, this really puts us up against a deadline. This is not fair. They never said any of that. They were just like, okay, November 10th is the deadline.
And they did it. They complied with the map.
Right.
They
but I guess I'm just saying, if the timing was such an issue, why did the lawyers not point that out when we set this schedule? Like, we set this schedule in September, October of when we would have evidentiary hearings and when we would hear this case.
Who set that?
The courts. The courts set this schedule.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, but
sure.
But with input from both sides, the input from the parties in the case.
I mean, who knows, right? I wasn't in the room. I don't think Adam was in the room. I don't know. I don't know why the lawyers would not have made an argument to that effect, other than to maybe say, if the judge had come back and said, you need to redo the maps and you need to redo them in accordance with these other, you know, guidelines, and then the legislature did that, they probably would have expected that that would have complied with what she wanted. And so to then have her come back at the 11th hour, literally, on the deadline, and say, no, just kidding, I'm actually going to choose the plaintiff's map. Like, it's not even, I'm going to, you know, no, you got to redo this again. It's, no, I'm choosing the plaintiff's map.
You also could have given time for the legislature to meet and actually change when candidates have to file next year.
Yeah.
That timeline could be moved around, but that didn't seem to be one of the options either.
Yeah, and I've heard Speaker Schultz and others come out and kind of this narrative I'm sort of hearing right now is we don't have any time to appeal for 2026 because we're up against this November 10th deadline. It's come and gone. We cannot appeal. So I'm working to get a little more confirmation that they're not actually going to try to stop this map for 2026, but like operating under the assumption that they're not going to. Do you guys think that's the right play here? And do they not have enough time? Could we get a new map if they were to ask for an emergency stay? I know they're going to appeal on the merits, but that will impact the map for 28 and beyond, not for 26.
I think they should appeal, and I think they should appeal the timeline, and I think we should get rid of this map and scrap it all together, and I think they should do whatever they can to do that. But I think is a part of your an answer to a part of your question is, yes, the legislature, like, they could do that. The timelines are tight, but they can't be met. The timeline cannot be met.
So but the actually, Supreme Court has the ability to say,
that's what I'm saying.
Blow it all up.
Well, but from a practical standpoint, like it would be very complicated to do that, right? Like, because you're not, you'd have to change the whole timeline. Like, if people are supposed to file in January.
When caucuses and this, are, primaries.
Yeah, and this shows up right now. I mean, you're looking at changing the whole process. And maybe the legislature would look at that and say, you know what? We're going to appeal this on its merits. We feel confident that we have a path forward in that. So if we lose 2 years out of this, like at this point, there's the alternative would be so much more chaotic for the state than proceeding for. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's what they're thinking.
I just feel like you didn't even ask. Like you didn't even ask the Supreme Court if it was possible.
I know they're still having discussions in the House and in the Senate to decide what to do next. And you have to get leadership from both bodies and a lot of members of the House and the Senate to agree on what to do next. And that's a complicated decision too. It's hurting cats.
Yeah.
And so we'll see what they come up with, but they're going to have to make a decision now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's move on from Utah's redistricting. Did you go to Texas's redistricting? That didn't come out right. Redistricting really fast. Texas can't use its newly drawn map. This is kind of what started the whole redistricting conversation across the country. Was President Trump pushed Texas to try to get some more seats for Republicans. Texas Republican did that. And now the courts are saying, no, you can't use those maps. I think a lot of people are talking about the dissent here. There was a dissent. This is a 3-panel appellate court. The dissent from the person who did not like this opinion was basically like, this is a George Soros effort. So everyone's like kind of finding that humorous and or maybe appropriate, maybe not. But what do you guys make of what happened in Texas? How does this kind of impact the whole redistricting fight across the country?
Well, I think that President Trump needs to stay out of this process. I think states are smart enough to do this on their own. He wouldn't need to tell Utah what to do on how to draw a district boundary. We can figure that out ourselves. We don't need him to figure that out for us. And apparently what he said to Texas was you need to gerrymander and look at partisan data. And Texas said, no, we're not stupid enough to admit to that, at least publicly. And he said, well, you need to do it among racial lines then. And they said, okay, we'll totally do that. And Utah, Texas in the South is under different regulations under federal law because of their past history with Jim Crow and civil rights and things like that. So they have different parameters that they can redraw lines with. And so Texas is taking the heat right now that they can't use their maps, when it's very interesting to see the other side of the coin where California is putting it on the ballot and they're passing ballot measures to say, screw the Republicans. We're doing this on our own. We're going to add more Democratic seats and take away Republican votes. They're very upfront about gerrymandering and ruining this political process. And they're saying we're doing it to fight President Trump. What's going to happen is Texas is going to now not be allowed to use these maps. California will be allowed to use the maps, and they're going to come out ahead again.
Well, that's my next question, Aaron, is does the combination of Texas no and California yes and Utah one Democrat, does that mean the House flips?
It could. I think it certainly could, because, I mean, that's been the whole game with this, right? And that's what makes this just an absolute race to the bottom, is that the minute you start getting into the discussion of let's change the map so we get more Republican seats, well, you're just going to encourage the Democrats to do the same, which encourages the Republicans to do the same. And it goes back and forth and back and forth, and nobody wins. Like, the voters are the ones who lose when that happens. And I think that's what we're seeing here. So yeah, if Texas is not able to change their maps, but California does, they create more blue seats. Utah now has this very blue seat. And if that stands, I mean, it will be, you know, the House has been on a razor thin margin for a few years anyway. I don't know. I think Democrats have a pretty good shot of flipping the House next year. And also, we're coming out of another red wave where we've had a majority controlled Republican Senate and House. It's not uncommon in the midterms for at least one of those chambers to flip anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear you. Okay. Another national topic I want to hit really fast. We saw both chambers of the House and Senate sign really quickly the Epstein files bill. It was signed last night by the president. Adam is pumping his fist. Tell me why.
I'm excited. Like, thank goodness, this is an Epstein hoax. This isn't real. Why do you guys care about this? But also, Pam Bondi, my attorney general, I want you to go investigate only Democrats mentioned in the Epstein files. So is this a hoax or are there people mentioned in it? You got, just stop lying to us.
We want the
answers.
It's
getting so old.
Yeah.
Every party has just continued to lie to us. Lie to the American people. Both parties have said we want to release the Epstein files when they run for election. And then when they win, they conveniently forget the promises they made to the American people. Knock it off. I'm so glad the discharge petition was filed. It was voted on. And I'm glad Trump finally came out and said that I'm going to sign this bill. There are ways that he can get around this. The Department of Justice is supposed to create a searchable database of the Epstein files, but he has opened up an investigation in the DOJ with high-profile Democrats. And my worry is that the Department of Justice will say, yep, we're going to release everything that's unclassified, but there's still a bunch of classified stuff because we're in an ongoing investigation on high-level Democrats.
Right.
And you're going to create another boogeyman, and we're not going to actually see the Epstein files. So I'm very hopeful, but I'm also very guarded in what's going to happen and how the Trump administration is going to hide these
documents. Well, that's the problem with this, is that it's there are loopholes in what was passed. I think President Trump had to sign this because it was almost unanimously voted for. Like, almost everybody voted in favor of this. That's a lot of pressure. If it had been very split or, you know, very close, maybe that would have given Trump, you know, I don't know. Who knows what
Trump
could have done.
Yeah, I was
going to
ask that. Is that because he could have released these files at any moment, but in the last few weeks, he's done sort of this flip flop where now he's saying, yeah, I'll sign it, no big deal. But he could have done this all along.
Well, and he hasn't wanted to for a while. He campaigned that he would, like Adam said. And then he got into office and, oh, no, we can't do that. You know, lots of protections. Oh, okay, let's protect people. No one's against that. But it just, it's back and forth. It's back and forth and back and forth. And I think the political pressure had mounted. The fight between President Trump and Marjorie Taylor Greene alone has been a huge part of this,
and
right?
Really funny.
And yeah, kind of entertaining, honestly. So now you have this vote where there was enough political momentum for pretty much everybody to say, yeah, we vote in favor of this. But there are still loopholes to it. If there's an ongoing investigation, they don't have to release that information. So how do you define ongoing investigation?
Pick a name that's in the Epstein files that we've heard nothing about yet. Who's in it?
Oh, that's a really good question.
I don't want to say.
just impugn somebody.
All right, I'm naming this the producer of this program. This is not legally advisable.
Just impugn someone. Just false allegations. That was a terrible question.
Who do I want to lose in a congressional race?
I think it will be really interesting, though, to see, because at this point you're just like, no, just tell me what's in it, because I have been like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Anything you guys want to add on any of these topics before we end? We have about a minute left, so I'm not going to get to our last topic because we don't have time, but is there anything that I didn't ask you that you think is important here?
I just think there's going to be a lot happening in the next 12 months here in Utah, and it's going to be really interesting to watch.
Yeah.
This is actually an opportunity where everyone that's interested in politics, everyone has very big feelings on this issue, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, pro-Trump, anti-Trump, whatever. There is never a better time to get involved in politics. Pick a candidate that you like, Republican or Democrat. Go work for them. Help them.
Donate.
Knock doors. Donate. Do whatever you can.
What's so funny is I was so down on this show about how no one cared about redistricting. Now it feels like everyone cares about redistricting because they didn't get the answer they wanted. So maybe you should pay attention along the way. All right, Aaron, Adam, thanks for being here. We appreciate your opinions. Producer Peter, appreciate you.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay. And make sure you watch Inside Utah Politics this week, Sunday at 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. on ABC4. Couple of candidates who are running for office on the Democratic side will be joining me this week to talk about their runs for Congress. And we will see you on this program on Tuesday.